What's your favorite film?
God, that's awful.
Favorite?
Awful.
Awful.
Your favorite
film is awful.
Hello, and welcome to Your Favourite Film's Awful, the weekly podcast where we invite guests on to defend their favourite films against negative reviews. As always, I'm Luke, the supreme leader. And with me as always, it is Charlie. How you doing, Charlie?
Where there was conflict, I now sense resolve. Where there was weakness, strength. Complete your training and fulfil your destiny.
Hello, Luke.
Hey, I'm the supreme leader.
Yeah, but you know, I thought I'd do the Snoke. You can be Kylo Ren if you want, mate.
Yeah, fair.
Actually, to be fair, I got the short straw there.
Yeah, I'm going to call it. It's going to be good.
Fuck.
How are you doing?
I'm magic, mate. How about yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. Have you got a guest?
I do indeed.
Can you introduce that guest for me, please?
Today's guest is an illustrator. Say hello.
Hello. How
Charlie
are you
doing?
Bell.
Hi.
Hi, Charlie Bell. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm suffering from a small head cold, so hopefully that won't read through.
But... yeah, that's fair. You did say you were good a couple times to the point where it was less believable that you were good.
Yeah, it's a Sunday, you know? So it's like I'm preparing for the rest of my week. Mm. And so I'm convincing myself that I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Is that what the hat's for?
Yes.
The head cold?
Yes.
I get it. It all makes sense. What have you been up to this week? Have you done anything interesting? Have you seen any good films?
Well, nothing that exciting, which is very sad. I've been going through lots of like exams at the moment. So a lot of time I come home and I just want to fall asleep for 10 years. So
fair. Yeah, I mean, you need your rest. That's a good thing. That's an important thing to do.
That is one thing I did watch recently. My boyfriend made me watch it. Oh, what's the name? It's this horror film, but it's meant to be like a superhero film. It's about a kid.
Brightburn.
Oh yes.
Yeah, that was the most recent one of those, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the kid, the Superman. Yes. Kid. Yes.
What
did you think of that?
Oh, it was garbage. Absolute garbage.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It was possibly, he said, I want to watch this. And I was like, well, I've heard that it's really rubbish, so I'm not going to invest any time in it. So I'll do something whilst you watch it. But it was one of those things where I couldn't tear my eyes away because I couldn't believe that they were trying to make this film.
Yeah.
Like, it was so bad.
That was the film with my first metaphor, I believe, with the pie that was burnt on the outside but undercooked on the inside.
Mm, that's perfect. That is perfect.
Yeah. There was potential.
Decent idea.
Yeah. Because it's basically just the Red Sun Superman, but with a character that they can just use freely instead of paying royalties.
Mm. Well, it just felt, as you said, undercooked, but like, there was no... you weren't excited to see what was going to happen next. It was just very violent, which I like, don't get me wrong. Like, Tom and I both really love violent films. And, you know, like that gory, getting to see those visuals is really cool. But, like, if you've got nothing building up for that or no reasoning, it's just, it falls very flat and it's just not fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could just predict everything that was going to happen and you couldn't believe that they were going to do that, but they did it. So that's my terrible review for Brightburn.
No, the perfect review. I get entirely where you're coming from.
I agree.
And... co-host Charlie, what have you been up to this week?
I have watched, what did I watch this week? I watched Miss 45, which is a film about a costume designer, or like some sort of fashion designer.
Okay.
Who is walking home from work and gets raped, essentially, by a guy. And she finds the nearest object, accidentally kills the guy. And she kind of like enjoyed it a little bit. And the whole movie is her essentially... going a bit Travis Bickle, Taxi Driver style, and killing any creepy men. But she's sort of slowly sort of descending into madness, where she's seeing every guy as like a threat. But it's very, very good. I really, really enjoyed it. Really low budget. I believe it was in the 80s it was made, but I really, really enjoyed it. There's a new film coming out with Carey Mulligan, I believe, that has a very similar kind of idea that I really want to check out. I can't remember the fucking title, which is really annoying. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I recommend it to people. It's also 80 minutes, and I think the whole thing was on YouTube. So,
oh, wow, okay.
So yeah, worth checking out. Quite violent and yeah.
Amazing.
Good. I really enjoyed that. And also watched the life of, was it David Copperfield?
How was that?
I really enjoyed it. I am a little bit annoyed with the trailers because I think they sell it as something it isn't.
I've been getting that vibe. That's why I haven't been trusting those trailers.
Yes.
But it has put me off watching it because I feel like it doesn't know what it's trying to advertise itself as.
Yes, definitely. I think it's going off the success of Death of Stalin, and it's trying to, you know, sell it as another Death of Stalin type comedy, and it's completely not that. It's funny, and it's got funny bits, but it's, I think, more of a dramatic story, quite heartfelt story. It's actually quite sweet. It's not something you'd expect from the director. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's really well made.
It looks quite promising, and the cast is pretty star-studded.
Oh, it's a great cast. It's been nominated for the casting for the BAFTAs.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I thought it would miss award seasons, because it's just come out, isn't it? Just like very much on the cusp of all the award season, you know, like all the like Oscars and stuff. Because like, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, that looks very like Oscars-y. and like we usually like, in my household, we categorize films whether they're an Oscar film or if they're just not trying to be an Oscar film. But
it's very true. Yeah, you can tell from
the Oscar bait.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
The Oscar bait, yeah. But yeah, no, actually, funny enough, we'll record these obviously before they come out. And I think the BAFTAs are tonight. I think it's up for a casting award if it's nominated. So people listening know if it won or not. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're just ignorant.
Yeah, we're just ignorant. Just what do we know? But yeah, no, really enjoyed that. And then I rewatched Heat. Which when I first watched it, I heard loads about it. I was like, oh, everyone, you gotta watch Heat, you'll love it. You know, De Niro, Pacino, Val Kilmer, like it sounds like everything I want, heist movie, Michael Mann. And when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, that was really good. I didn't necessarily think it was this amazing masterpiece that everyone was saying it was. But boy, I was wrong. It fucking is a masterpiece. I'm going back and rewatching it, made me realise even more. I mean, it's 2 hours 50, and it honestly flies by. Like I was like, what? Like, there's so many different threads that everything gets paid off towards the end, and I think it's a phenomenal movie and really interesting to show the sides of cop and criminal and how they're not too different. And I know that's a trope now, but that was one of the years.
Yeah, Heat's one of those that when I was a kid, I think my dad was like, hey, watch this, you'll really get a kick out of it. But you remember when I said about Fifth Element, where I watched like the beginning and then turned it off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Heat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I wasn't at the age. I wasn't at the age where I could appreciate film or just, you know, grin and bear it. I wasn't at the age. I had a much easier time of just turning shit off.
Savage. Have you watched it since then? I would highly recommend rewatching it. It's on Amazon Prime at the moment. Okay. So I definitely check that out.
Okay. Glowing review. I like it.
Wicked. Luke, what did you get up to this week?
Okay, so this week I watched two films. So are you proud of me? Because after that week of watching nothing.
Oh yeah, you watch a lot of TV though. So yeah.
I watch a lot of TV and YouTube. That's just all my time.
I'm much the same.
Thank you. This week I watched The Missing Link. That's the...
Yeah, the animated.
Leica.
Is it nominated for an Oscar?
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah. And it keeps popping up on YouTube being like, hey, it's nominated for an Oscar. Watch the film. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's the only one that I didn't watch because the trailers didn't sell me. Mm-hmm. And Leica, I am sorry. I would like to make a formal apology to Leica for not trusting you. I should have trusted you because it's great.
Really?
It's a lovely little family film. It's so nice. It's great. It's great. It's about finding your place and all this good stuff. And I watched it and I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't watch you in cinema when I could have. Like, I'm sorry. I should have done that.
I keep meaning to watch it and I agree with you. Nothing sold me. So, but that makes me want to see it because I've been like wanting to because I know Leica's amazing. The films that they produce are amazing. So we'll give that a go.
One thing I wish though is I wish they stuck with that the one word gimmick for the titles, because what you got, Paranorman one word, Coraline one word, I think Box Trolls is one word, and then Kubo and the True Strings fucked it up, and now
they can Missing just do Link. Whatever they want.
They can just do whatever they want.
Yeah, but Kubo was fucking great.
Kubo was amazing. Wouldn't it have been like just that 0.01% better if it was just called Kubo?
Okay.
Like, come on. Maybe this could have just been called Link. It would have been great.
I quite like long titles. My favourite, though, are two-worded titles. I don't know why. I really like Good Time, Uncut Gems. The same directors. I just listened to the same, But like, I just like those type
of
movies.
I'm sensing a bit of bias.
Pulp Fiction. There we go. Reservoir Dogs. There we go.
And then the other film I watched was The Rhythm Section.
Oh, okay.
Which is the Blake Lively, which was nice.
Jude Law and Sterling K. Brown.
Yes.
No, the reason I say this is because I don't like shit on people, but if ever I see Jude Law in a movie, or even Sterling K. Brown, they don't necessarily excite me. So I'm not necessarily sure if I'm going to see this movie or not. But if I hear good things, I will. So Luke, is it worth seeing?
Tell him.
Tell me, come on.
I enjoyed it. Okay. It was alright. It wasn't like mind-blowing. It's one of the basic thing is you got Blake Lively's character. Her family is involved in a quote-unquote accident. She has like a bad reaction to grief, and then she finds out that it wasn't an accident.
Ooh.
And so she goes for revenge. And there's one long take in it, and it was beautiful. I love my long takes. Mm. It's a little car chase, and it does
okay.
It does something that I realized 1917 didn't, and that was do like a bird's eye, do a high angle shot,
okay.
So you can actually see distance. And in this car chase, it did like a high angle shit, and it like brought in close. So you were like in the seat next to her in the car, but also you could, like at the beginning of the shot, you could see like how far she got to go.
So
what's
like
going
spatial
on.
Awareness.
Yeah, so it really helped with scale. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes.
That's cool. I like stuff like that.
The person I watched it enjoyed it to the point where he got a little lost, and then he didn't enjoy it so much.
Fair.
You know, taste.
Talking about that, have you seen Good Time? Have you seen Good Time?
I don't think so.
There's a chase in it.
Okay.
It's like from the sky, like bird's mm-hmm. eye sort of view. And it looks almost like an on-foot chase. And it looks a bit like you're watching like Hotline Miami, like the other game. Like the way shot.
Yeah.
But like, there's something really cool about that. It's like, I don't know, I think you're like that little... It's not long at all, it's just this one little shot. But
yeah.
I was like, that's really interesting to shoot like that. I don't know. It felt like a bit video gamey.
Okay.
But it also added tension because you can see everything. So it's like, oh, you can see how close everything's getting. But
yeah. Anyway. I'll definitely add it to the ever-growing list of films that I just watched.
Yeah.
Charlie Bell.
Yes.
Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
You're on Your Favourite Film is Awful, so what film have you brought?
I have brought to you both The Last Jedi.
Ah, Star Wars The Last Jedi.
That's why I did all that stuff at the beginning, you know, I wasn't just being weird.
See, I just plucked Supreme Leader, like,
for no
out of air.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just like, this would be a nice name.
What a coincidence. Yeah. What a quinky dink.
What? For those at home who either haven't seen it recently or haven't seen it at all, what is The Last Jedi about?
Ooh, okay, so The Last Jedi carries from Star Wars Force Awakens, which is the 7th in the Star Wars franchise, making this one the 8th. We follow from a young woman called Rey, who has had a bit of a tumultuous time. Like, she, from one minute she's on a deserted area, and now she has to be thrown into this big ol' war, you know. Oh god, it's really hard to encapsulate, but brief summary. She goes to find Luke Skywalker to ask him to help them fight the First Order, the baddies. And we go from there, really. We also follow Finn and Poe, who go on their little journeys. One to Canto Bight, which is a place that we've never seen before in the Star Wars franchise. And I don't even know how to explain Poe's flight, but he has a hard time.
Hard time with authority.
Well, yes, exactly. Yes. He doesn't like being told no.
Exactly.
So.
You could say, just to help you out,
please.
Essentially the First Order have figured out a way to keep track of the Resistance wherever they go. And it is essentially one big space battle in space where the Resistance are trying to get away from the First Order before they're basically wiped out. Whilst Rey goes to Act 2 to convince Luke that we need his help to basically, you know, stop the Resistance from dying and losing all hope in the galaxy.
Big space battle. That is definitely one set of words to call that, really, isn't it?
It's just a big space battle. I mean,
yeah.
It makes sense, right?
Like, maybe closer to, like, very slow spaceship car chase, but, like,
true,
you know.
True.
Slowest chase
of course,
all time.
So this is an interesting case where both of you gave like a bit of a thing and both of you fucked up because neither of you said the truth, which is that this film is fucking awful.
How dare you?
The worst.
You're wrong.
The worst to the point where it's causing injuries because Uncle Yunkle, who gave this a half star
Uncle
review,
Yunkle.
It made me cum blood.
Jesus.
That's how awful this film is. This poor Uncle Yunkle.
Is he okay? He should get it checked, man.
I mean, I don't keep track of our reviewers, so like maybe he died after this.
I feel
this.
Like you can't blame that on a movie. That's definitely a you problem, right? If that's happening.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't know what he's been doing with it, if I'm honest with you.
Well, his blood cum or...
Yeah, I mean...
It's like wrong guy on there. Should definitely get that checked and then watch the movie after. Maybe you'll like it a bit more.
Yeah, when you're recovered.
Yeah, your dick isn't hurting you so much. You
just went too hard for
we
too
just,
long.
We just went there, didn't we? We just got to this point about Dick Blood. It's a nice introduction to this podcast. Oh, yes.
Because
when you think Last Jedi, you think Dick Blood.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, and I feel it just like calms us all down. It really lets me proceed to kill you both with the next review, which is Sean Riley with another half-star review. Mm. Last Jedi absolutely did not earn its runtime. It felt long and dragged out. There were multiple unnecessary plot lines that took away from the main one. The movie, as a whole, took away or ignored elements that make Star Wars special. The twists were decently executed, but poorly conceived. The ending set up absolutely nothing and causes no excitement. Legacy characters are either put on the back burner or trashed. The tonal shift between it and Force Awakens is significant. The change in writer-director between the two films is so obvious it's painful. The only nice thing that can be said about this movie is that the visuals are stunning.
It's so interesting because everything he had just said is just completely wrong.
I thought he was going to quote Luke then. Yeah. Yeah. Every word you just said.
Oh, God. I mean, where do you begin with that? Everything that... I don't agree with any of that. I think The Last Jedi really... Where The Force Awakens is like a love letter to the Star Wars franchise, like, it does really rely on nostalgia mm-hmm. and callbacks to make it special. And I don't think that lasts. I don't think that, like, you... Especially considering the target audience, this is a Disney film, their audience is the new generation of children. And nostalgia and callbacks is not going to last for them. It's not going to draw them in, and it's not going to excite them. So what Rian Johnson did, I think, was completely subvert that and ruin... Well, not ruin that, but destroy that notion that that's what this trilogy is going to be about. It really irks me with the ending. It didn't inspire anything. Are you kidding me? Like, on Canto Bight with Broom Boy, mm-hmm. which is what Twitter calls him, I think.
Yep, yep.
That's incredible. That shot is incredible. And to me, a lot of this film is Rian leaving stuff up for interpretation. And I think the way I interpret that ending is that because we've spoken so much about the Force in this film and how it's not what we're used to thinking of it, you know, like it's everywhere, everyone can be with the Force. It's nice to know at the end that that's going to keep going. That mm-hmm. hope is still there. This boy, we don't know anything about him, but he could be a Force user and he could be the next generation of hope.
Yeah.
And I think that's wonderful. I think that's absolutely wonderful.
100% agree. Yeah, I would completely disagree with that last thing you said about it doesn't open up to anything. I mean, let's disregard the fact that we know that Rise of Skywalker exists. And just it's like the Last Jedi just come out and we're theorizing.
Please.
Again. For me, what I loved about The Last Jedi was the fact that I think Rian Johnson left JJ or whoever was going to take on the mantle at the time in a position where they could do anything. That's how I felt. I thought they could have done anything. And a lot of people say they closed off. Shit, you know, didn't get really bad. I'm like, you get your big bad. You get Anakin Skywalker, but if he killed Palpatine, you get Kylo Ren, you know, as the big bad or whatever. In the final installment, you could have took it anywhere. You could have done anything with it. It gave you literally, he opened it up to do absolutely anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's what...
And I feel JJ really did do anything because what he did was bring back an old villain.
Yeah, I know exactly. It's sad, but anyway, let's not talk about that movie. One of the reasons why I think this movie's great is because I think it understands Star Wars to me, and I know that's probably gonna be a lot of complaints that are gonna come up today on the podcast. People saying it's not like Star Wars, not Star Wars, but then it's weird because I think it depends who you're talking to and what they think Star Wars is. I think there's a big, you know, there's a lot of people out there that think Star Wars is, you know, lightsabers and, you know, killing people, and they're like soldiers, whereas to me they're not, they're almost like monks, you know, they're like,
it's absolutely
their whole, you know, their whole thing is about peace and purpose, and that's why I think The Last Jedi has some of the best Jedi moments of all time, and they gave them to the best Jedi of all time, Luke Skywalker, when he gets given a chance, you know, have this big battle or lightsaber fight against Kylo Ren. Instead he refuses to fight him, which to me is the most Jedi thing. And to convince anyone to turn from the dark to the light, that's by giving them, you know, not necessarily love, but by not fighting back with anger, that's everything that Star Wars represents to me. I mean, that's why Vader turned to the light again, was because Luke refused to kill his father, you know, even if he's the nastiest man on the planet. And that's what being a Jedi was all about. And I just, to me, it really captures that. And I think The Last Jedi has some of the best Star Wars moments in the entire saga. For me, in particular, to point out a scene, the scene between Luke and Yoda, it almost makes me cry every time.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It sums up everything that I think Star Wars is, and I think Star Wars is for a lot of people. And I think it's not about the fighting stuff to me. And I think people get, I think because there's a generation that were brought up on the prequels, where it's very, it's a different time in Star Wars when they had to almost be like soldiers because it was, you know, it's a different, it was a different time. There was a lot of going down. There's a war.
Clone Wars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas that's not what Jedis represent. And I think what I love about that scene in particular is that, you know, people get annoyed that Luke didn't come out and pull down a Star Destroyer from the, you know, from the sky and kill everyone or whatever. But Rian Johnson actually, I was listening to an interview with him, he actually said, I thought about doing things like that in the script. But then I've sat there and I thought, well, it's not interesting. It's just serving me as a fanboy. It's not, what does it do? If anything, it makes him so overpowered to the point where...
Well, it's wish fulfillment for the fandom. And I think this whole film, you know, it's a big, not a fuck you, but it's a, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do fan service here. That's not happening. Yeah. This is what these characters are doing and you're going to have to just do it. It's a lot of character development.
Yes, it's very character driven.
If Luke came about in this film and he saved the day and he, you know, struck down Kylo Ren with his... He did save the day. Exactly. But if he was the Luke Skywalker that everyone wanted, you know, the hero, there would be no need for Rey or Kylo. And it would just be boring.
Also, quite frankly, why would he be on that island? Hiding away while this happened, if he was... Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes sense. Like, people get older. As you get older, people, you know...
Change.
People change. And yeah, he ended... It was a Return of Jedi and it was happy, but, you know...
It's been 30 years, in this, like, canonically.
It's made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't stop evolving. People don't stop making mistakes and growing from that.
Yeah.
And I think that's so beautiful that this film covers that. Because
that's what I was going to say with the Yoda scene.
Yeah.
Why it brings me to tears, and it's like, failure is the greatest teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theme of this movie. Every single character in this movie fails at their objective, including Kylo Ren, including Snoke, including everyone mm-hmm. fails. But it's not about, you know, failure. It's about, you know, learning from your mistakes and growing. And that, and I think that's a beautiful message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really agree with that. Everyone fails in it, including Rian Johnson, in making a good film. Because I have another half-star review, because there's no niceties for this film. This is from Artemis Kane. A truly disgusting piece of character / lore rape that utterly destroys the potential of the Star Wars sequel trilogy. This film does not subvert expectations, more so that it just pisses in your face. The plot has holes you could park a Star Destroyer through. The characters are regressed in comparison to the past movies, including Force Awakens. The much praised new strong female characters in this movie are all in actuality awful. And dare we forget that horrendous throne room fight.
Was it? It was a man that wrote that, right?
Okay. I have no idea.
Well, I'm just going to assume.
Okay.
I feel like this film was so written for the female gaze, and whereas The Force Awakens really was not. What I love about this film is that it does have four very strong female characters, but they're shown in a very human way. Like, because I feel like I could ask someone what makes a female character strong, they were like, oh, you know, they've got all this strength and they can fight and they can do that. But it's more for me, it's like being mentally strong. So for example, people hate Rose, right?
People do hate Rose.
People be hating on Rose
to the point where she deleted her social media.
Oh god.
And she was basically written out of the sequel.
Yeah, but I love Rose so much. I honestly think she represents, like, us as the viewer. She's not a Jedi. She doesn't have, like, Force sensitivity. She's not good with a blaster. She's like, every impulse and choice that she makes is to do with her heart and like what she cares about the most. And I feel like that's what we would do if we were in that situation. Because she's essentially just a cog in the resistance machine. She's like, she's a nobody basically, which is lovely. Which is also another thing this film plays on. Like having your legacy come from nowhere.
One of my favourite things about the movie. Because I never liked the idea that, you know, you have to be from a certain lineage, a certain family to be a Jedi. To me, you know, the Force always, you know, flows for everyone. Like it's there's certain people that can channel it. You can be anywhere. And I think that's a good message to everyone, because it's like anyone can be a Jedi. And I think that's, you know, you don't have to be someone special.
Absolutely.
And that's what's so... And also, talking about the character thing, for me, like, I think what makes interesting characters and strong characters is their flaws and how they handle their flaws. And I think one of the problems that people say with Rey is that she doesn't have any flaws or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But what I like about The Last Jedi is I think it did try to give her some flaws where, you know, she's a bit entitled. She thinks, you know, she's from a special lineage. And, you know, she's trying to find out, well, why, where am I? Where's my place in all of this? She's very... a bit, not unhinged, but she's not emotionally sure where she sits in this. She's a bit lost and...
Well, she's desperate, basically. She's desperate to find out that she's got a family that means something.
Exactly. And the worst thing, I mean, when you're writing, you should always try to throw the worst possible things that your characters can hear so that they can try, you know, overcome these obstacles. Mm-hmm. And the worst possible thing that Rey could have heard in that moment with Kylo Ren is, your parents are no one. They were...
You are nothing, but not to me. Hey. It's not to me.
I like that.
I love you. Thank you. You're on your dark side.
I like that because they're both lost. They're both lost young.
Well, I feel like they kind of... they're teenagers. The best way to describe Rey and Kylo is that they are two halves of a protagonist. So they are basically the main... They're both the main character.
Yeah.
Rey wants a family and she wants, you know, this powerful legacy. Whereas Kylo Ren, he has this powerful legacy and family. And he doesn't really want the Solo name or the Organa name. He wants, obviously, like, the...
He wants to be himself. He wants to be an individual. He wants to be
exactly.
His own
thing. He's always been told that he's destined for greatness, right? So when it starts happening, he's not happy with it. And I love that. I love that dynamic for him and Rey to have, like, contrasting desires. But, you know, they still connect somehow. And I think it's really good.
Yeah, that's especially highlighted because doesn't Snoke call Kylo, like, a young Vader?
Yes, young Vader. Yeah.
It's like, you're only as good as your grandfather, while Rey is only as good as... Well, no one, because she doesn't have anyone. Or point. Does she? Yeah.
Well, he plays that to him, doesn't he? He plays on his anger. He says, you know...
You've got Solo's heart on you as well.
And then when he wants him to kill her, he says, you know, you have powers apparent to Lord Vader. Like, one minute you're telling him, you know, you'll never be a Vader. Next minute, it's like, you can see how he's this conflicted character. And I think that's what's so interesting about him is he's Anakin on the other side, but he could... turn back, and I think that's
it's a reverse. Yeah. Just to go back on like Snoke saying conflicting things. Bearing in mind, Kylo Ren has been like manipulated his whole life by the dark, and also then been kind of like abandoned by Han and Leia because he was pushed off to Luke, and then Luke disappoints him because he's like scared of him. You know, he wants to kill him for a brief moment. That's why this film is great, because there's so much to their characters. There's so many motivations and, you know, like something that's happened to them and this is why they are this way, and which is why I love Luke's story arc so much as well, because it's just, we get an explanation and it's a hard one to swallow as to why he's pissed off to Act Two. You know, it's really hard to like...
But also, we keep forgetting he's a Skywalker. Luke Skywalker is a Skywalker. We know that Skywalkers have a terrible problem with their temper. Mm. We've seen Luke. I know people say, you know, he's perfect. We see him a lot in The Return of the Jedi. He is slicing down at Vader and he brings him to his knees before he chops his hand off. And he's furious. You can see that anger is in him. And then that's when he realises not to do it. How can you watch that scene and then say to me that, you know, when he thinks of that brief moment that he might have to take it into his own hands and stop this? Like, he doesn't act on it. He just thinks about it for a brief moment and he knows he's fucked up straight away.
Yeah.
And he can't forgive himself for it. And that's why that, again, that Yoda scene is so important, because Yoda's like, failure, you know, you have to, as long as you learn, that's what's important. As long as you try to, you know, redeem yourself, it's okay to have these, everyone goes through these problems, even as a Jedi. Mm. Like, you're not just perfect. Like, what did you expect Luke to just be fucking people up all the time and be, he always have the answer to everything? Like, that's not interesting. And yeah, I just, that's the things that I think make this movie special, is like, yeah, it's very character driven. And I think it also, it opens up the world more than the, what The Force Awakens did, in a similar way to how Empire did for New Hope. It kind of opens up the world a bit more with the philosophy of the Force. And also, you know, we get to see places like Canto Bight. You know, take what you want from that scene, if you don't like it or not, it's still added to the world of Star Wars, in terms of it made this, there's a grey area to Star Wars, you know, that people are sending weapons to both the Resistance and the First Order. Like, that's interesting. That, you know, that,
it's also like, it's nice to see that there's other people outside of this war that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these like rich fat cats on a like a holiday island, and they don't give a
shit. Yeah, no. Just making that's money really off nice. The war. They're making money off the war.
Yeah.
And I think I like as well, you said earlier about how it, people like Rose, how they're given, like, these normal people in the universe that are given more character, and we see it through their eyes.
Mm.
I think that's shown perfectly in the opening scene.
Yes.
Where with Rose's sister, whereas like this is the first time, if you think about it, in Star Wars, where the people that are flying these ships are given, you know, we care about them.
Yeah, names.
We care about them
and
dying,
yeah,
and the names.
Exactly.
And I mean, what I think, I mean, this, the opening alone, I think, is a masterclass in filmmaking.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we meet this character, we meet Rose's sister for 5 seconds, and immediately we're with her. Mm. We're there. We don't want her to die. Like,
no, oh my God, no.
And it's incredible that the way he sets up tension, where, you know, she's kicking the ladder to knock down the detonator, as we're cutting in between Poe screaming and the First Order screaming, and that she's kicking, it's going into slow-mo, then it comes down, it drops, it falls past her, and we think, shit, she's fucked it. Oh no, grabs it. Like, it's incredible filmmaking. Like, the tension that, also, I would argue the best, probably the one of the best next to the Return of the Jedi space battle in Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
With the ships. Like, I think it's incredible, the whole bit with Poe taking down the dreadnought. There's so much tension, you care about everyone in the ships pretty much. And it's also, again, another failure. As much as they killed a dreadnought, it sets up Poe's character, which he was lacking a little bit of in The Force Awakens, where in this one, you know, he's got a bit of a bravado. He's all, you know, he's a bit too, what's the word? He's ferociously optimistic to the point of his own detriment, you know. Mm. He's too self-involved in,
well, he's,
you know,
he's thinking more about winning and not about like how
lives of others,
yeah, the lives of other people.
Mm.
I feel like a lot of people would argue that like Poe and Leia's story is probably like the weakest, because it goes on for quite a while, and it's not like, once again, they're on this very slow moving ship, and it's all about, you know, them trying to teach Poe that no, you can't be a hero right now, you've just got to be selfless. And you've, but I think Oscar Isaac does it so perfectly, like he just with Holdo and stuff, and how he's still trying with her. I just think it's a wonderful like story arc for him, because he has to get rid of his ego, he has to think about every single person on that ship,
mm-hmm.
and find a way to fix it. And then when she sits on that ship alone, basically a suicide mission, I love that realization that he has. I think it's really, really beautiful. But to go back to Paige, Rose's sister, that scene is absolutely perfect, because then when we meet Rose, we've already got this empathy for her. We've already got like
this character established.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, that was her sister. She has so much now to fight for and be upset about and want to change things. So I think that's really incredible. And it also just proves that, you know, it's not like the Skywalkers and the Palpatines and the Solos and the Vaders. It is these small people that are losing their families and friends, and they're fighting for something too, rather than, you know, the bigger picture, which is nice.
Also, I know there's some complaints that people have made about why didn't Holdo tell Poe her plan. Well, for me, why does he need to know her plan? He's, you know, he's fucked up. He got a lot of people killed. Mm-hmm. As much as, you know, killed that dreadnought, he got a lot of people killed. He's been demoted. He's just another X-Wing pilot, essentially. Yeah. Why does he need to know? They're the people at the top that are solving this situation. She's also trying to teach him a lesson of, you need to know your place, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, you fucked up. You're getting punished for
this, basically. Exactly. And yeah, people might say it might have made things, you know, smooth or whatever, but the plan was still going ahead regardless. Mm. He doesn't make a difference to that. He just tries to do his own way around it. But Holdo was going to figure it out the whole way anyway, you know? Mm. And I think she was a great character. I know people don't like her, but I think she was brilliant. And that whole, I mean, the bit when she sacrifices herself through going through lightspeed, but the thing, I mean, it's visually stunning.
So visually stunning. Mm. Absolutely.
And a great moment of pure emotion. And also, a very Jedi thing to do, to sacrifice for the life of others, you know?
Yeah,
heroic. Heroic, like, yeah. Exactly. And that's what I love about Star Wars as well, is like all the other side characters, when they have Jedi traits in them, you know?
Which is the Force. The Force is in everyone. Exactly. So it's such a nice metaphor.
Paige grabs hold of her...
There's a moon, yeah. I can't remember what it's made.
The Hazian Smelt.
There we go.
And, you know, and she closes her eyes for a minute and then she kicks it and it comes down. It's like... Everyone, you can channel it in your own way. It's about, you know, I don't know. Belief. Exactly. Yeah.
And also accepting that, well, I'm going now, but I hope that everyone that I love and keeps on with this fight, basically.
Yeah.
Which is just so beautiful.
It is, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, the guy said about law. This is a lot of people, you know, they go on about lore and plot holes. When Luke knows, I gets to me. I'll give you an example today on Twitter. Someone tweeted at Christopher McQuarrie, who's the director of the Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, and Fallout. Mm-hmm. He said, "How do you deal with plot holes when you're writing?" And he just replied saying, "Plot equals holes. Whenever you try to write a story, there's going to be holes, no matter what." Yeah, sometimes there's ones that are sillier than others. Yeah, we're aware of that, but. For me, in this movie, I mean, everything serves character, and that's the most important thing. I mean, I've always been a character over plot guy anyway.
Same.
I do like a plot, but character is more interesting to me. I mean, films like Taxi Driver, where the plot's not necessarily, you know...
It's not the most mind-blowing
yes,
plot.
Yes, exactly, but it's character-driven. It's about seeing the movie through the character's eyes, his day in day, you know, as he loses his mind or whatever. And that's what I liked about this, and the reason why we all love Star Wars in the first place is because of the characters. Mm-hmm. And yes, the world building is great. Yes, it creates this world that we've all fantasized about and made our own stories and wanted to be in the world as a kid or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's because of those characters that we love so much, like, you know.
Well, I always say a good testament to a film or a TV show is that you can watch the characters literally sit in a room and do nothing but really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what, for me, Ryan definitely encapsulated that. Like, they're not doing a lot in this movie, but I'm enjoying every second of it because they're going on their own little character journey and they're developing, and that's just the best.
Yes. I mean, Days Confused is a movie about teenagers hanging out over the summer. It's not necessarily the most elaborate plot, but you love the characters, you're invested in the characters, and that's what makes that film special. Yeah, no, it's really difficult talking about this movie because I've had so many conversations with people, and I think it really does boil down to what you interpret Star Wars to be for you.
Yeah, I think you can ask 10 people.
Yeah.
Line them up, ask them each what Star Wars represents and like what their favourite bits are and what their least favourite bits are. It will all be different.
Yeah.
And everyone will always have a different list of what they want the next Star Wars film to have in it. Yeah. Or what purpose it will serve. It will always be different.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Rian Johnson had such a hard time, because he was the second. Like, he's the second in this new, like, trilogy, right? He has a lot to carry on from. Mm. And it doesn't help when, like, directors like J.J. Abrams, when they love things like mystery boxes. How difficult is that to, like, unpack, especially when J.J. Doesn't know the answers himself. So I think Rian Johnson did an amazing job with that. Like, I know he obviously couldn't do all of it. So like the Knights of Ren, they just kind of piss off. And Snoke's backstory, etc. But it didn't need that, I don't think. It didn't need that.
Well, I had a friend who wasn't a big fan of The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
He was half and half about it. And he likes it more after Rise of Skywalker. But he said that he realised that his problem with The Last Jedi wasn't the answers, which is what he thought it was, that Rian Johnson gave him. It was actually the questions that J.J. Abrams posed in The Force Awakens, the things that he tried to set up, he actually didn't like. I mean, people get annoyed saying it's pissing on their face. To me, I think Rian Johnson answered the questions that he posed. People just didn't like the answers.
Yeah.
It just wasn't... And I find it strange to me. It does seem sometimes that people want the same movies over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think this, to me, was Rian Johnson being like, okay, what is the most interesting thing the characters can hear? He thought about the characters first. And that's what's important. How can we make Kylo Ren different to Anakin? Oh, he fucking kills his master Snoke. And everyone was saying, you know, we didn't know who Snoke was. He was no. It was like, does it really matter? It doesn't really matter. When we first watched the original trilogy, we didn't know who Emperor Palpatine was. He was just Emperor Palpatine. And yeah, people will say, well, the law's been set up now. How did he build up this thing? Does it really matter? It's about serving character. Again, people get so obsessed with the minutiae and the lore all the time. But it's instead of thinking about this, tell a great story.
Also, like the character's future. I'd rather know about their futures rather than delving into the past all the time.
No, exactly.
I think like that's what this film poses. It's like, stop it. Stop thinking about that past. Let's talk about their futures. Where are they going to go and how they're going to do it?
Yeah.
It's just, that's my favourite thing that he poses in this film. It's just, let's talk about the way that they're going to go now.
Yeah.
It's only up from here.
It also dissed the throne room scene, which I don't know, how do you feel about the throne room scene? Because I think there's been a lot of videos online now of people nitpicking down the fight scene, the actual choreography of the fight scene, but
that's so...
There's two things I say to that. One is, you know, movies are not meant to be slowed down to the point where we dissect them all, you know, down to the T. I mean, that's a very new thing in the culture that's happened now with YouTube and stuff.
I agree.
But, I mean, regardless if you think that's the thing that, you know, that bothers you, fair enough. I mean, I do think there is some parts in the choreography I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird that they didn't think that. Yeah, I agree. But for the moment, for that scene when...
It's stunning.
It's incredible.
And the also, moment, it's helped by Rian Johnson, like, doing things in particular ways. Like, they shot that all in one go. Hmm. I mean, multiple times, obviously, to get it right. But they shot that all in one go. Like, it was a continuous thing. And that really pays off for me. I think that's really cool because you get to see them working together in tandem. And it's not heavy with dramatics and stuff. It's just, it's this fight scene that's really pretty to look at. And it represents more than it shows with action, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, nothing excited. I don't know if when I first watched The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. I don't think I felt a feeling in a blockbuster for a really long time before that where I was so excited at the prospect of what the fuck is happening now?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Completely flips it because you don't know what the hell's going to happen next. Yeah. And that was so cool.
Refreshing, right?
It's so refreshing. Oh my God. So I love the bit where, it sounds really silly, when Rey uses like Kylo as an anchor, she kind of like leans back on him and pushes herself forward. That is just so cool. And I don't think, one thing what we haven't spoken about a lot is their Force connection, which is such an interesting new dynamic.
100%. Some of the best stuff in the movie.
That is just that those scenes, I could just watch those scenes like all the time. I think they are so, and the way that they were shot as well, it was very simple, like they're just in the same room together doing the lines, and they just had to do that again on a different set to make it look like they're on different planets. But it's so well done, and all the emotion, like that hand touch scene.
Oh. Yeah,
like Rian Johnson came out and said that that's probably like the closest thing you'll get to a sex scene in a
Star
Wars film.
It's very true.
And it's like, but yes, and I think people get annoyed by that because it's very like, oh, that's people don't seem to want romance in Star Wars films.
Yeah,
and I love that that's like very subtle, but it means a lot. Those things mean a lot, and that's how I like about the throne room scene is because it is that it's. Them coming together is really cool after all of what we've experienced in the film already.
Hmm.
Yeah,
well, yeah, I can understand what you're on about.
Yeah, like these are movies ultimately for children. I think people forget that. They think they've got to be dark because there's aspects of the prequels that are dark, but people forget Jar Jar Binks and they forget all the comedy aspects.
As a kid, I loved Jar Jar Binks.
Everyone loved Jar Jar Binks as a kid. Don't even lie to me.
Yeah, yourself. Like I hate when people lie to me about that. I'm like, you liked him. Yeah. Shut up.
Don't get me wrong. He sucks. He's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But when you're a kid, you know, he's fun, you know?
Yeah,
I totally agree. And I think that the whole, also like, that's not a special effect.
No.
It's just editing. It's an editing, you know, cutting between the two, match cutting between the two. It's just, it's incredible.
Because you could make it like very transcendent and like pretty and different and have all these special effects for when they're doing the Force connection or even the frame room scene fight, really. But it kind of just hams it up.
Yeah.
And I think keeping it to its basic, you know, the how it would seem to the characters would be just, actually, I think that's so beautiful and cool.
I agree.
And that Rian Johnson does that a lot in this film. You know, he tried his best to keep, like, a lot of things practical. And he wanted, like, locations to film on locations and stuff. And I don't know if you've seen, well, the documentary kind of talks about it a bit, but their budget, their budget didn't really hold for everything that he wanted to include. But he did try his best to keep things practical and the filmmaking to be very unique, but simple.
Yes.
And he definitely wins at that. So.
100% agree.
But then you go to some of the special effects, like Crate. Was beautiful.
Oh,
that
beautiful.
That will, that imagery of the white and the red will never leave me.
No.
I don't think.
Yeah, no, like you said, it's one of the most visually.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, stunning.
Completely, and I think, but that, in contrast to how the film goes, I think that annoys people the most.
But it's
I can see how it does.
Do you remember when The Force Awakens came out? Everyone was moaning about the lack of originality of The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
And
people will never be pleased.
Yeah, and the planets weren't new or fresh or exciting or whatever. Now we get Crate, which is just this gorgeous place, Canto Bight, which feels a bit prequely at a time. So you get a bit of a nod to the prequels, which The Force Awakens tries to ignore. JJ seems to have no time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it's, you know, you've got to include them. It's part of the story.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can't just ignore the bits you don't like. You have to rework them so they work for you.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like this one as well, because they're very much acknowledging that in the prequels, there's mistakes have been made. And we have to learn from these now.
Yeah.
We don't want to repeat the past, which I like. That's the kind of the tone.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see the prequels acknowledged.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like, just jumping in very quickly, that the biggest sin that this trilogy did was not have a plan. Because, of course, George Lucas, when he did the originals and the prequels, he wrote out a 3-film plan and he stuck to that.
Mm.
But this one of just fucking freeballing it with different directors, different writers.
It was
a nice idea in concept. I just think that the issue is when you get what happened, which is when you get an ego contest between people not liking.
Well, it's not. It's different.
What Star Wars is.
Styles. It's different. Like, because we've just said about what people see Star Wars differently.
Yeah.
So even if you take it out of ego and all that stuff. If I'm like, yeah, Star Wars is about lightsabers and fighting, and you're like, yeah, the Star Wars is about the Force, we're going to get two very different films from the beginning, but then somehow my film about lightsabers is meant to be a sequel to your film about the Force?
Mm.
Yeah.
And then there's no thread, there's no, oh yeah, first film this happens, second film this happens, third film this happens.
Yeah.
Like, nah, just, here you go, guys, do what the fuck you want.
Yeah.
I think my theory for this is that they've seen the success of all these Marvel movies. You know, like if you look at like Taika Waititi's Thor, which is amazing, very thematically different from the last two, but it worked. I think that's maybe what they were trying to aim for. So like these directors will bring something different every time, but it will still be cohesive, but they didn't think about the cohesive part.
Yeah, you know? Especially because it's meant to be a trilogy.
And it is an ego contest at the end of the day, because even if they wanted it to be cohesive, then they weren't trying hard enough. So. Yeah.
For me, I think what they were trying to think about was the fact that the original, people forget, there is no other source material for Star Wars. Star Wars is made from movies. It's completely made.
Originally.
Original, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Originally it was. Now we have all what's it called now? The Star Wars Legends?
Yeah, but like, canon either.
Yeah, but it's not canon, but that means that they have all of this material that they can look at and pick and choose which threads that they like and what they want to do, and they just went, nah.
Yeah, but that's their issue. That's other people's problem. That's not the story.
That's Disney's problem.
No, because
and then Disney didn't go,
Legends the story. Was never canon, you know? Well, it's all fan fiction.
I'm just saying that all of this stuff exists. So, yes, that's the case with the originals, but this didn't have that excuse.
Mm.
Like, these three movies didn't have the excuse of there's nothing that we can take away from. They themselves made stuff not canon anymore and then chose not to look at it.
Yeah, but that, you know, it's way more interesting to get fresh, more new ideas in Star Wars than to have that. Like, personally, as a fan, I'd way rather have that. And I think, yeah, I agree with you, they should have had a plan, but I think I also like the idea that they treat Star Wars different. Star Wars is not like the Marvel films. You know, people say you know, these movies are not, they argue they're not cinema or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But to me, Star Wars, you know, Star Wars is cinema. It was created by cinema. It was nothing. It's not, it wasn't a commercial product. It was, but you know what I mean? It was about the, it's creative kids movies, you know? And I just think, I like that they had the idea of, you know, trying to make them more auteur driven than, you know, a product, but you know, it didn't quite work out. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree to disagree because this was just a product. These three films...
Well, Razgulk was, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but like the whole trilogy is really just Disney going, cool, we've got this franchise, now let's make money off
but
it.
But The Last Jedi felt like that wasn't the case though. That's
exactly
what I liked
about it. So The Force Awakens, The Rise of Skywalker, they're there to sell. Right? There's to sell tickets, merchandise, toys. Yeah.
But then you've got to remember that the only reason we have The Last Jedi is because of these other two films.
Yeah, of course. Whereas those two films are like movies, like blockbusters, I felt like this one was a film. It was Star Wars being a film, but still works because you still want like merch of that. I still want merch from that. Mm. Like I'm so excited to have those things, you know? Yeah. And it helps that it's visually stunning and this and the other. I just think, honestly, people just can't quite understand this film because they are thinking about these blockbusters, you know? It's not quick and fast-paced and it's not action-riddled and, ew, there's some romance and that's a bit gross, isn't it?
Just because, I mean, do you know the Empire Strikes Back? The reason why Ivan Kershner didn't do the Return of the Jedi was because he tried to be a bit more visually out there with Empire and he tried to do things that George wasn't happy with. And funny enough, we ended up with the best Star Wars movie. Yeah. And that's why Return of the Jedi is a bit more coverage based.
Yeah.
Because he, apparently the director was more, you know, him and George were, because George is an incredible storyteller. We know that.
Mm.
As a director, I mean, he's not bad,
he needs someone to reel him in. He needs that.
Yes. But yeah. I can see you itching to say something.
I was when we had time.
Oh. Well, why don't we can do it anyway. If we go over a little bit, here's The Last Jedi. We're coming to the end of the season.
Yeah, actually, I do have something. So due to time, we're going to stop the reviews right now. But I have a fun little game that I'm going to think is fun. Yeah. And Charlie, this might be okay for you.
See, I've been hearing a lot about this game, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
And so, co-host Charlie, you're going to fucking hate this game.
Oh, God.
So this is from LRockLee31.
Perfect.
This originally is a list of plot holes. Oh, that noise is beautiful.
I changed my mind. We haven't got enough time.
Yeah, no, let's go.
Well, we can still do one or two, maybe. One, only Luke Skywalker could have left the map in R2-D2, yet in The Last Jedi showed that he didn't want anyone to find him. So why leave the map? Stupidity. You forgot it was there. Because that's an idiot plot.
That is a stupid thing in The Force Awakens. Mm. That's not necessarily a problem with The Last Jedi.
Yeah, not at all. So, next.
The captain of the Dreadnought targets the base first rather than the Resistance fleet, which is a sitting duck and is about to flee, as opposed to the stationary base, which can't flee. A defense of this is he thought there would be more rebels on the base than in the ships, but in Episode 4, the Empire detected no life forms aboard the escape pod, so clearly you can detect life forms at a distance, and he should have known this was a less viable target. But even if he couldn't tell, because reasons, any non-idiot military commander would have targeted the escaping fleet first.
Well, to me, I think, it makes more sense to me that they, you know, destroy the base because it's like, you know, you can get the ships after. They're in a small contained place that you can chase after, whereas the base, you know,
it's the heart of everything.
It's the heart
right?
of it all, right? So if you destroy the heart of it, then you can worry about the little, you know, the bits of debris that come off of it.
No, you destroy the thing that can run away and then destroy the thing that can't move.
Yeah, but also they're not aware that, you know, I mean, I'm pretty sure his aim when he was blowing up the place was to also blow up the ships that were trying to leave as well. I mean, he does successfully blow up some of the ships that are there as well.
I know, everyone gets off.
No, it's only the one ship that goes off with
Leia's
daughter. Yeah,
and when Leia's daughter goes up, she goes, everyone leaves.
Not Leia's daughter.
What?
Yeah, when Carrie Fisher's daughter goes up, she's like, Everyone got out.
Yeah. That is success. One of the grossest nitpicks I've ever heard of, though.
Yeah, it's that's really petty.
It doesn't add to the story at all. Like, it doesn't do anything. It's like, it's one of those things you could do with anything. Like, why did that film cut to that? Because it's editing. I mean, it's just, there's so many silly little things that people get obsessed about.
Well, that's the thing. I think people forget that we're literally watching a wizard movie. A wizard movie where they've got light swords.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, you can't. Like, why do you have to try and justify everything?
It's a fantasy movie. Dude.
Yeah. I'm surprised neither of you gone with the obvious defense, which is you wouldn't have a movie if they destroyed the fleet with all of the characters on it.
Yeah, true. Actually, you know what? Yeah, you're right.
We changed our answer.
Okay, cool. Three, after Poe disobeys Leia's orders and continues to bomb the Dreadnought, why didn't Leia just contact the rest of the group and order them back? It doesn't make sense why she wouldn't be able to contact them.
Okay, the way I see it is that they respect Poe a lot. Like,
than Leia.
He commands, like, he inspires them, right? Like, the way that his confidence in this plan inspires them. So I feel like they believe so much in his confidence that even if Leia was to tell them to come back, they wouldn't feel too happy about it. So they wouldn't.
Okay.
You know, because they can kind of see where Poe's going. They're like, well, this does make sense and we're here now. So
very interesting, actually. I've never thought that. Yeah. That's quite an interesting. Yeah. I also think maybe that this is an interesting question, actually.
It's a very good question.
Now I was making you think as well, because I don't see this necessarily as a plot hole. I think this actually adds something a little bit to maybe the characters. Like, maybe there's even a part of Leia that's like, should we see what we can do?
Well, yeah, because she's got a lot of hope here. Because it looks like they're about to do something big. Because they've already succeeded in the first half, so give them a try.
Also, like, she's not 100% sure that the ships are going to get destroyed. Mm. She's afraid that they will. It's not until after they've blown up the Dreadnought where she looks at the monitor and
everyone's gone. All the X-Wings just go, blank.
And then she's like annoyed at him. But it's like, so I think that's, that's how
it's a good thing to ask. Flaws. Yeah, exactly.
It's an interesting thing to ask, but I don't think that's necessarily a plot hole.
No.
Okay, fair. Why didn't the First Order send part of their massive fleet ahead through hyperspace to cut off the Resistance fleet and destroy them? The Millennium Falcon manages to travel through hyperspace to this slow-mo space chase in the middle of nowhere, so clearly hyperspace travel is just a go-fast button now.
I'm a bit confused by that.
So in the Resistance won't hyperspace away because then they're out of fuel, and then the First Order will follow and then kill them.
Yeah.
But there's nothing saying that the First Order doesn't have any hyperspace fuel to jump ahead of the Resistance fleet to where they're going and kill them.
Well, they're if you've got more fuel, you can go further. Is that what they're saying?
Why aren't the First Order going ahead of them, basically, and catching them out by getting ahead of them and then getting them from, not from behind this way, but from the front?
Yeah. Do they know where they're going? That's the thing.
Well, currently they're just going in a straight line.
Yeah, they're very slowly going forward. I honestly think it's due to the First Order's cockiness. Like, they've got them, right? Yeah. They don't need to do that because they've got them. Yeah. The Resistance is fucked. They know that they're fucked, so they're toying with them because they're evil. They're evil. They're the bad guys. So, Hux especially is probably just like, this is easy.
Well, Hux is literally just like, carry on. They'll run out of fuel eventually and we'll just fuck them up.
Well, they say that a lot in this film, so.
Which always makes me laugh when the bit when they're like, Snoke is trying to contact you, sir. And he's like, yes, good. I'll take that in my chambers. Because he knows he's going to get the ship out. And then he just turns up and he's like, shit. You can just see it in his face. It's hilarious,
I love his character so much.
Yeah.
I love how he's so simpering.
Which is a shame as well with the Rise of Skywalker, because I think what he set up with this one was like, I think it was an interesting dynamic to see that, you know, here's this guy who wants to kill this god, essentially, in Kylo Ren, but like, they don't like each other, but they have to work together.
But also, I mean, the bit in the throne room scene, after the throne room scene, when Kylo's passed out, you can see Hux just about to, like,
pull the gun out.
Yeah,
right?
So that's such a cool dynamic. Why didn't they play on that?
I know, but anyway.
But
that would just be too good.
That would just be too good, yes. Yeah.
Leia was let back onto the ship from space, and when the door opened, everyone wasn't sucked out into the vacuum and died?
because this is a space movie where there are wizards holding lights on. Yeah,
doesn't quite work the same, yeah. That's...
If we nitpicked every fucking thing, yeah. We would not have.
That's anything. Why you can hear explosions, because you wouldn't be able to hear explosions in the real space. But this is a movie, you know, fantasy movie. Well. It's not real at all.
So yeah, next.
Ray swims on Arc 2 despite spending her entire life on a desert planet with nowhere to learn to swim.
Mate, people are sad. sad. What a sad thing to think about. You know what I mean? Who gives a shit?
She just gets there and drowns and dies, and that's the end of the film.
Shit. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. Do you want. Okay, sorry. We're at a scene in where fucking Ray learns to swim. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's Chewbacca's that's holding her up in the pool.
People just want 2 hours of training. That's all people ever want. Like, yeah. They just want people training all the time. And I'm sorry, but like, I'm a big fat, like, I like anime, but I think anime has ruined people because I think you get episodes upon episodes upon episodes of people training and people are so obsessed with that now that they expect the same thing from movies. Like, and I think, you know, you can't do that. It's not.
Hey, even Rocky had a montage.
Yeah. But that's the movie. The movie's about the fight. It's very different.
Yeah, it's a very different film as well.
Force ghosts can now interact with the physical world since Yoda summoned lightning. Therefore, why didn't he do that to destroy the battering ram cannon on Krayt? And why has no force ghost helped in this way before, ever?
I always imagine that they can't, due to some sort of, like, their own sort of rule, that they can't affect the balance of the universe, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the whole chaos of thing, you know, that's the constant thing that, you know, the dark and the light, they can't affect that. The light has to deal with that himself. I mean, he doesn't, by him blowing up the tree, doesn't really affect anything. It's more just teaching Luke a lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, what the Force Ghosts are essentially there for, to guide people. Yeah, I don't think they can actually...
They don't think they can meddle with, like, the state of things.
Yes, I agree.
You know,
yeah.
They can't shift the future, but yeah. They can teach lessons.
They can burn a tree that's empty.
Yeah.
Apart from some random explosives.
The text. Yeah. He takes them.
Not all of them, though, right?
No, she takes all of them, I think.
Like, well, there's no way of us knowing. Yeah. Also, he, like, goes to go in and something explodes and he's not allowed in anymore. Yeah. What explodes, we'll never find out.
Some of the best memes from that, when someone was like, oh, when your mum chucks away your Lego manual. It's like, the Secret Jedi text.
When the mutiny occurred, Holdo was neither put in the brig nor had her gun taken away from her. That's the only reason she managed to escape. Idiot plot.
Well, more like idiot plan, right? Because they're meant to be fucking up. This whole film is about them making mistakes and acting rashly, so...
That's what humans do.
Yeah.
We make mistakes.
They're not thinking sensibly, because they're in quite a...
What did they say again, though? Sorry?
So when they do the mutiny, Holdo is held at gunpoint, but her gun is still on her side.
Oh, right.
And she's not taken anywhere, she's left there at gunpoint.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like, you know...
Well, I think it's like they're acting rashly... It's not all of them that are doing mutiny.
And they're also all there together, like... I don't think they expect anyone to, like, shoot anyone. Like, kill anyone. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know they have the taser thing, but I don't... So, like, they are teammates, essentially. Yeah, I mean,
they're just having a big argument.
Yes.
Big old argument. How did Snoke know about the Resistance evacuating when no one told him?
Someone off screen told him.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I mean, like, if we can have the Rise of Skywalker with the dead speaks, I think we can have this with Snoke, okay? Like, so.
If hyperdrives can be used as a weapon, why has no one ever done this before?
Because no one's thought of it before.
Such as against the Death Star.
Because no one's thought of it before.
Yeah.
It's a risk that she takes. She's not sure that it's going to work. Mm. She just does it. And then that's why, you know, I mean, talk about the Rise of Skywalker, but they go, the Holdo maneuver, and it's made famous after that because no one's ever done it before. Yeah.
What I also love in that is that Poe can give an estimated figure of it's a 1 in a million chance, even though this is the first time it's ever happened. Yeah. Oh my god. What's next? Finn goes at full speed towards the battering ram cannon, yet after all other speeders pull back, Rose can catch up and turn to come at him at a 90-degree angle and still manage to hit him, even though she's piloting the exact same craft.
Channeling the Force, you know, she's driven to save him.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's driven by love again, which, you know, the Force likes that. It's very strong if you... you know, if you're powered by love and she, you know, knocks him out of the way. You know, again,
once again, it's
silly.
Just a fantasy film, so that can happen. Like,
but again, you know, like you said earlier, Luke, you know, you're not going to have tension or a movie, you know, with So if you want a nitpick, if you're talking about Heat, yeah, they watched the other day, right? There's a bit where Val Kilmer's coming out of the bank and he's smiling and he's walking towards the car and he's literally practically right next to the car. And then we watch Al Pacino swerve around the car, pull out, jump out, run round, and then shoot one of them. And it's like, well, obviously in that time, they didn't, you know what I mean? He would have got to the car before he got there, but you know, it's movies, right?
It's just film.
It's impossible to, if you want to watch real life, it's boring. You know, they have to be cut up to make things work, right? So
that's half the reason why we're watching films.
It's editing, that's what editing's about. Yeah.
Why did Luke project himself to Crate at all? It wasn't to kill Kylo. It wasn't to redeem him, since he said he wasn't there for that. It couldn't have been to buy time for the Resistance, because at that stage, no one thought there was a back way out. Did Luke know?
Yep.
If he did, why didn't he tell anyone?
Well, he... come. Sorry, I'm jumping in.
No, go ahead.
Well, first of all, you know, he winks at C-3PO. I always took that moment as C-3PO knows that he's not actually here, but also... there must be some sort of way out, I think. I think it's him winking at, you know, I'm here for a reason to get out. And that's when they try and figure out, come up with an idea. Yeah, I think Luke's well aware that there isn't, or at least stalling them to figure out a way, even if they aren't. Because, so, yeah. You know, what else can they do
once
at that
again,
point?
Once again, he's got hope, right?
Again,
that's the thing.
He's doing hope. This is, again, he's using a very powerful sort of, you know, false maneuver that, you know, he knows is probably not going to come out at the end of, but he's doing it because, you know, he's not going to be able to get there in time. This is the quickest way he can do it. And his hope is that they find a way to get out in time. So,
and also he gets like his forgiveness from Leia at this point, right? For what happens with Kylo.
Yeah.
And that's very poignant. And
Yeah,
maybe not the reasoning for why he's there, but we do get that scene, and it's not just pointless.
Yeah, that scene's so fucking good. Everything with that, the music when it comes out. And that's what annoys me as well, because people are like, we didn't get to see Luke pull out stuff, Star Destroyers. I'm like, man, you got to see Luke like fucking shrug off like all these bullets being hit.
The shoulder pat thing,
yeah,
is great.
Obviously, essentially mug off fucking Kylo Ren and then dodge all of his fucking movies like Neo in The Matrix. Mm. And then, you know, and then just say goodbye. I'll see you later, kid. Referencing Han Solo. And
just like
and
the last nice knife twist,
yeah.
Basically, right?
It's like, that's the most awesome fucking shit I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I lost my shit in the fucking cinema when that happened, but you know, whatever. Each to their own.
Okay, so of course, this list is a lot longer, but I've picked and choose, and this will be the last one.
Oh, dear.
Finn drags Rose's body the miles back to the base, without any of the upgraded AT-ATs or soldiers killing them for some reason?
Because they're focusing on like what Kylo's doing, right? They're going into the mine to go get their resistance. So these two people that are probably dead or dying, what's the point?
Makes me laugh. Kylo and Luke like fighting and then in the background just dragging Finn along. Editing.
Editing.
Yeah, movie magic.
We don't need to see it. Yeah.
Very true. Also, like, this isn't in the thing, but Poe and some soldiers, like, they run away from the cannon, they slide into a trench, and then use, like, a hole to, like, get back to the base.
Oh, yeah.
So, maybe...
Underground tunnels. Oh, yeah, maybe one of them was underground tunnels.
Yeah.
It's true.
Have you guys played Battlefront, too?
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of explain it in that game,
but obviously.
I don't think that's, like... Is it canon?
Yeah, it's canon.
Yeah,
so that's...
Okay.
Like
again, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. We watched a film. It was really good.
Okay. Well, you know, that's the ones that I've picked from those plot holes. You defended it against both review and plot hole very well.
I think we did a good job, mate. I think we actually fucked them up a bit.
It was good. Well, that's the thing. It's so hard to... Well, you can sit here all day and nitpick it, right? But we wouldn't have a film anymore.
Yeah.
And you can't appease everyone.
You cannot. So. However, Charlie.
Yes, hello.
How would you recommend this film? Like, what's a good review that would recommend it to the people that have listened to all of these things about how awful this film is, all the obvious plot-destroying plot holes? How would you recommend this film to anyone to watch?
If you want a refreshing take on this Star Wars franchise, I think you should give this one a go. Because not only do you get these new locations and, you know, new plot devices, you get these characters that are so well thought out and they get... everything just feels new and exciting for them. And by the end of it, hopefully, if you enjoy the film, which I hope you do because it's one of my favourite things in the world, you get to have such an understanding of these characters even more than you did when you first started out. I don't often rewatch films. Like, I don't binge watch things. I don't. For me, I watch one film and then maybe 2 years later I'll watch it again. Like, even if it's a favourite. So, like, The Fifth Element is another favourite of mine, but I can't watch it more than, like, maybe once or twice a year. Whereas The Last Jedi, I watched repeatedly, and I only ever do that for, like, TV shows. Like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is one thing I could just literally turn on and be engrossed with, despite the fact I know everything that's going to happen. But I think that's kind of a testament to this film's way of being episodic and, like, and in its storytelling. There's, like, clear arcs, and there's just a lot to unpack with it. And Ryan leaves a lot of things up for interpretation, which a lot of TV shows do. You know, you have cliffhangers and you have ways to respond to certain, like, arcs, which is why I like The Last Jedi so much. There's a lot to it in a simple way, and it's visually stunning. So give it a go.
Amazing. Nice. And co-host Charlie, what are your thoughts?
If you want to watch one of the greatest blockbusters of the decade, if not the next to, I would say, Mad Max Fury Road and probably Infinity War, then, you know, this is it. This is, to me, not just a great Star Wars movie, but a great movie. I think anyone could watch it, even if you're not a big Star Wars fan, and appreciate the filmmaking. It's pure filmmaking. It's, you know, it's Ryan Johnson doing what he does best, making fucking movies. It's everything I ever wanted from a Star Wars movie. I've said it before, I think it's the third best Star Wars film. I think I would listen to someone say it's the second best. But to me, it's just an incredible feat in blockbuster storytelling. The fact that we got a blockbuster that feels so director-driven, auteur-driven almost, is a miracle, especially with a Star Wars movie in this day and age in the film climate. And regardless of what you think of The Last Jedi, I think no one can deny the filmmaking involved in this movie. And I think pretty much anyone who doesn't like it has said, you know, he has a good director, apart from the ones that, you know, hate Rian Johnson to a certain, you know,
there's a lot of
ridiculousness. But
to add to that as well, that you can, with his directing, you can tell that he's been a long, like, term Star Wars fan.
Yes.
And there's a lot of love being poured 100%. Into this film.
And you said about the documentary earlier, the Doctrine of the Jedi, look no further than that to see. And he's often said, even from this day till this day, that it's the best moment of his life. Mm-hmm. And you feel that. And you feel that watching that movie. It's a movie crafted completely from love from the franchise. Mm-hmm. It's a shame, you know, again, this movie comes down to what you think Star Wars is. This is what I think Star Wars is. And I think it truly is a masterpiece. I really do. A blockbuster masterpiece, I really do. But Luke, what did you think? What do you think of? What is your review of The Last Jedi?
So.
Yeah, okay. I don't like that expression.
Yeah, we always have to end it with Luke with negative notes.
You know? Yeah,
I
like negative notes.
End it with a positive.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you didn't always want to jump in first. Then maybe
okay, maybe. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
maybe. Okay, so here's the thing. I remember watching it in cinema. I finished the film. People did the whole, oh, what did you think? And I thought it was a very slow space car chase and it was a bit shit. And then over time, I've been influenced by everyone else. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe it isn't. But I didn't rewatch it. That's the big thing. I didn't rewatch it. I just had other people telling me it was better than I thought. And so my memory of it was twisted in such a way where it was held as the second best Star Wars or third best Star Wars. And so rewatching it again, it was like, I thought it was bad, but then people told me it was good, and then I watched it, and it's neither. It's not bad. I think it's a good Star Wars film. I think I've said this previously. I think it's a good Star Wars film. I do not think it was a good second part to this trilogy, of the sequel trilogies, and especially now that we've got the Rise of Skywalker, like, you can tell, even though JJ didn't tell anyone, like, there was meant to be Oh, I can see you, like, holding yourself back, yes. Charlie. Oh, don't hurt me.
No, sorry, I'm just going to quote Uncut Gems. Like, I disagree. Oh. I disagree, Gary.
But no, I think my main gripe, and I have said it already, is that there should have been a big plan. They, like, even with the way this film has been made, I think a lot of it
Ryan
could have been
should have done all three, yes.
Absolutely.
In fairness, like, yes?
Yeah.
Like, if he'd done all three, then would, the second one would have been great.
So, such good money to see that.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Or even if he'd done the third one. I think if he'd done the third one, or if he did all three, it would be a different situation, because it would be Rian Johnson's trilogy, as opposed to Rian Johnson's sequel to J.J. Abrams before a J.J. Abrams sequel. And so there's, like, there's no through line.
I think to argue for that, though, like, yeah, there was no plan.
Yeah.
And Rian did what he did with what he had. And it's very hard to, like, come out with something good, which he did. Very, very good. More than good. It's very hard to come out from that after JJ's The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Like, I think any other director, if they made a movie after that, people would be disappointed and angry.
Yes, I agree.
Because it sets up so much.
I agree.
Even JJ didn't know what he was doing. So, like, what are you meant to make that?
The Force Awakened is nostalgia and let's throw in as many mystery boxes that we can have.
Oh my God.
So there was never going to be a chance for the second one to open all of those mystery boxes and especially not open them in a way that's satisfying for the majority.
I actually think now that it actually was a mistake to have JJ come back. And that's not just because of Rise of Skywalker. No, that's not just because of Rise of Skywalker. But I think the fact he did the first one, someone else did the middle one, and then he did the third one, because it's like, he obviously had an idea of what he wanted all three to be.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it actually would have been better if we did have a different director.
Mm.
And, I mean, that seems to be the case now with the leaked script from Colin Trevorrow, which seems to be the one I wish we got, essentially. Even if it wasn't a good movie, I think it still would have satisfied the story of the sequel trilogy, which I don't think that... The Rise of Skywalker does at all. Yeah, so I think maybe that plan might have worked if we had a different director, another fresh take again. But I think the problem was that the guy who did the first one come back and wanted to make the
make the sequel trilogy that he wanted, and the third one didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't help that the third movie just makes the first two just look so much better in comparison. It's very hard to talk about this without comparing it to the absolute garbage that was The Rise of Skywalker.
But it does. I guess that's kind of my, like...
Because we're talking about
an element that I shouldn't be able to... I should be able to detach myself and be able to just go Last Jedi on its own, but there is
a thing. It's made me sad.
It's like, I can't just look at it as The Last Jedi is on its own, because it's... It's the sequel, so I should be able to look at the first one, look at the second one.
Yeah.
But then there's a difference there, and then okay, there's a third one, so maybe, but not like
I feel like if The Rise of Skywalker hadn't come out yet, this would be a very different conversation. Because it has, it's
there'd
tainted.
Be a lot of hope in our voice, wondering what they would be doing.
Yes, exactly. It's hard. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that The Rise of Skywalker has made them love The Last Jedi even more. Made people go back and watch it and think, people that thought it was shit, now they're like, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah, I've truly heard that as well.
Which is sad. Like, that makes me sad, because obviously we've come from this thinking it was an amazing film from the get-go, but it took a bad film to make them... Really? I don't know. It's hard. It's like good and bad, basically.
True. For me, the Star Wars saga ends with Broom Boy.
It ends with the fact
the war continues. It's always going to. There's always going to be a dark side, a light side, but there's always going to be hope. And that's how Star Wars ends for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. To summarize, it's a good. I think it's a good film. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. It's worthy of watching. Listener, give it a watch if you haven't watched it already. It's just the whole fact it's part of a trilogy that sours it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think.
On a more positive note, on a lighter note potentially, Charlie, do you have anything to plug? Where can people find you?
Well, all the links for my everything is on my Twitter, so I'd recommend you go there. You will probably see a lot of retweets about my feelings about Star Wars, and I haven't been able to stop. I'm sorry for that. But it's at Magician Bell, all one word, all lowercase. I do commissions. My commissions are currently open. So if you want something nice for a friend or even for yourself, I really want to do some Star Wars commissions. So that's me asking the void, please. Okay. I would very much like that. That's me. You'll find all my links there. So
ask the void, and I'm sure the void will answer.
Please.
Charlie, where can people find us if they so desire to do so?
They can find us on Twitter at Fave Film Was Awful. They can find us on Instagram, Your Favorite Film Was Awful, and Facebook, Your Favorite Film Was Awful. And also on YouTube, Your Favorite Film Was Awful. Please check it out. like, share, subscribe, all that jazz. Yeah. Send us some messages.
Send us the comments. Give us the comments. Give us the reviews. Give us the 5 stars and the iTunes and all that good stuff. Also, you know, if you're really enjoying it, maybe tell some other people about the podcast. Let them know that this thing exists. I don't know. You do what you want to do, but, you know, help everyone hear our lovely opinion. We are important, says me.
Say what you want to us, the awful boys. Awful boys. Apparently, that's what we've been called now.
We have been called this.
Wait, who called you the awful boys?
The awful boys. But it's because,
I feel like we should... your favourite film is awful. We are the boys of your favourite. We are the awful boys.
I like that. It sounds like a the Beastie Boys. Sounds like we're a rap group. The awful boys.
Oh, it's one of those that... They made the joke originally, and we're like, "Yeah, okay." But then the more we think about it, it's just,
maybe,
need to make some merch.
Yeah.
Well, who knows what the future could hold? Listener, thank you for listening, and bye bye.
Take care.
Bye bye.